Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Des Bishop Podcast, Melbourne Comedy Scene Special.
Tonight it's funded by you guys, so we have a donation bucket at the end. Pay what you think it's worth. Of course, we've seen a lot of comics tonight. Has everyone had a good time? Yeah. Well, you know, be generous because we get all the money that's been paid off and a lot of us are sleeping in our cars. So please give generously because, yeah, no one gets paid tonight. So thank you so much. And you guys have been an awesome crowd. So would you put your hands up and get bananas?
Put your hands up.
Put your hands together. Sorry. Put your hands up. And then start putting them together. Let's start going bloody bananas.
Thanks, man.
Throw your hands up in the air. All right. How is everybody? Great. Oh, yeah, that was great. You know, so I just said I have a podcast. I'm American, but I live in Ireland. I have a podcast mostly Irish people listen to. So I was going to do like a special Aussie episode. So I thought, oh, I'll get a bit of footage of me coming on stage. And it starts with him going, okay, guys, we're going to pass around a bucket. And I fucking back around and they're like, he's killing it over there. He's doing fucking shit. He's fucking busking. So, anyway.
Yes, that's right. I've been sampling not just my own show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, but doing some other gigs, mostly run by a great comic called Carl Chandler, who is our guest for today's podcast. And I kind of wanted to talk to Carl. Well, actually, the main reason why I wanted to talk to Carl was because I had a car with no, not a manual transmission. So we hadn't sort of cruised around in a car and chatted to somebody in a while. So I was doing some of Carl's shows, so I asked if he would join me for a cruise in the car. But I thought it'd be interesting to talk to Carl because I used to run gigs in the International many years ago, and he runs tons of shows in Melbourne. So I really just wanted to talk to him about the process of running shows as a comic, you know, because that's a unique thing where you have to give gigs to your friends or not give gigs to your friends, and that can be awkward. Anyway, this is very much a comedy, Not so much a comedy nerd special, but people that are interested in the workings of, you know, the entry-level comedy game should definitely listen to this. I think it's a good chat with Carl anyway, but for the person who doesn't give a crap about the comedy world, probably not the best podcast to listen to. Not that I should run down my own chat with Carl. In the second half of the chat, we talk about his own show where he employs a heckler, a comedian, to heckle him throughout the show, which I did this night also. And other than that, enjoy the chat. Just because we don't have a destination until I drop you home, which is part of the bonus of doing this podcast, I'm doing a hook turn.
All right, nice.
Because I think a Melbourne podcast in a car has to start with a hook turn.
And I think it's a very it's a nice audio feature to do a specific turn in a car that you can't see.
Yeah, I mean, they can't see the hook turn, but at least it's happening. Yeah. That is very specific to Melbourne. So before we start chatting about anything fun, as a Melbourne person, can you describe the hook turn?
The hook turn is, for some reason, if you get to the traffic lights and you want to turn right, what you do is you turn left, basically. It makes a lot of sense. Like, you got to pull off to the side, to the left, and wait basically until the light turns red, and then you turn right before you get hit by another car.
Yeah, essentially
from the
you're
way.
Joining the traffic coming from your left.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, I think it's actually a great system, but I just think it's nice to start a driving podcast in Melbourne with a hook turn.
Yeah.
I think that's the way it's supposed to start.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It wasn't my plan, but we did end up at a hook turn section at that time. But really why I wanted to... Well, there's a number of reasons why I wanted to talk to you. First of all, you've been very good to me this festival. You give me tons of extra spots.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for doing them. I run a bunch of gigs. I'm like, I'm obviously a comic as well, but I combine that with running some sweet gigs.
Yeah, well, you run a lot of shows in Melbourne.
Yeah,
which we'll talk about in a minute why that's important. But you have, I've done. Tonight was the third extra gig I've done.
Third and fourth.
Well, fourth was the heckling.
Yeah.
Which we'll also discuss that in a minute, but I have a bit of audio to go with that.
Right.
But first, the comedy at Spleen I did tonight was the first gig of yours I ever did many years ago, 2009. So how long have you been a comic, for starters?
Comic, I think 11. I think 11 years. And so then I started running Spleen with another couple of comics about maybe 3 years later. So there wasn't a lot of great gigs in Melbourne. There wasn't a lot of good gigs. And it's that thing that, you know, happens in every city where there's only a couple of gigs and maybe you can't get on one or two, and all of a sudden you're like, fuck, what am I going to do? So we started like a cool gig and basically went, what are all the things that drive us nuts about other people's gigs and what do people do wrong? And just tried to make our version that didn't have any of those things. And
What do you think were the main things you were trying not to do?
Well, back then, I reckon there was only a handful of gigs, and say there was like one good gig that we couldn't get on at, and we could never get on. It was really hard for anyone to get on. So we went, okay, well, let's make a gig. Let's make a really, and it was a good gig, but we thought, let's make a really good gig that anyone could get on. Like, it's going to be heaps of good comics.
Interesting. So no standards.
Well, no, but here was our little, you know, whatever it is, a little rule, was we'd have, say, 10 comics on. And so, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them would be really good, but there'd always be a couple of spots for people that just sign up, no matter what the quality. So,
right, so okay, so you had a very open policy.
Well, only for part of the show, but meaning that no matter what, you can possibly get onto this super sweet gig. So there'd always be someone that maybe was doing their first gig or maybe wasn't that great or whatever it was, but they were on, like tonight, with you, or with, you know, tonight Luke McGregor was on, or... you know, Daniel Sloss was on. So you'd always have these new guys doing, you know, this great gig, full house, with these pro comics. So there was, you know, and it was a good gig, and people would really aspire to do it. And that was our aim. Because, like I said, the only other gig you either couldn't get on at, or all the other gigs were just toilet gigs, where there was no audience, everyone else was shit, the MC was shit, and there was just nothing in between.
Which is mad, because it's... Like, Melbourne is one of the big comedy festivals.
Yeah, and back then, there was sort of this weird... it wasn't a rule, but this is what people thought back then. There was two rules people had in their head, which was the comedy festival's on, so you can't really do comedy in Melbourne for 11 months a year, because people thought that no one wanted to see comedy for 11 months. But I was like, that's so dumb. Like, as if there's no need for comedy for 11 months. And, you know, I was... proved right. I mean, not that that was a big achievement, because that's an insane idea to have.
Yeah.
But and their other idea was that you couldn't do comedy in the city, which again to me seemed insane.
Really? Because that's where all the... couldn't do comedy in the city?
Yeah, because there was no clubs in the city. Nothing at all. No comedy at all in the city. And people would say, you can't do it in the city. But that seemed crazy, because that's where all the tourists are. That's where people go to from outer suburbs. So, and now, of course, this is like 7 years, 8 years later, every comedy gig in Melbourne is in the city.
Is in the CBD.
Yeah.
And now, we're at the Town Hall.
Yeah.
Hub of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
But it's Monday night, so it's kind of the night off.
Kind of the night off, except for you, who's doing two of my gigs, plus driving around
talking on the podcast. Well, I mean, literally, I rented this car today to go down to Sorrento. I got my little cousin Bella with me. I wanted to, you know, make sure she saw some pretty things today. So we went down to the coast, and then I had the car tonight, and I was like, oh, it's an automatic. You know, when you have an automatic, you can chill in the car.
Yeah. I still don't think this is legal, but sure, yeah.
Oh, the chat, we've already established that nobody cares. I mean, you know, we're just...
Hey, you did a correct hook turn. I've done a correct hook turn. Now you're allowed to talk into a microphone as you drive.
Now I'm cruising down Canal Street, passing the Gucci shop, doing my podcast, you know. Like, I think there's something hip-hop about that. Where do you live, by the way?
Hawthorne. So it's like, it's not too far out. It's like two or three suburbs.
I'll drop you out
there. Yeah.
We can start heading that way now.
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess, you know, I ran a room in Dublin for a long time, the International Comedy Club. My brother runs it now.
So this is great, because it's not that many. It's when a comic that also runs a room meets another comic that also runs a room. It's good to talk shop, because any comic can talk to each other and talk about bad gigs and we can all relate.
Yes.
But that's not that often that you run into someone who has the same complaints and can bitch the same ways about running rooms.
Yeah, well, it's tough to be a comic and run a room. I mean, when I say tough, now I understand that there's people probably out there with financial difficulties and stuff. So it's in relative terms, it's tough.
Yeah.
But what I always found tough was, you're a comic, you know what it's like to be a comic, right? But when it comes to running the room, you know, you have your way of running it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Standards-wise and all that type of shit.
Yep.
So there's a conflict there in terms of you want to hang out with your colleagues, but some of your colleagues, not all, but some of your colleagues are going to think that you're fucking with them.
Yeah, and you become, it becomes like a boss situation as well, where then there's certain people that you have to tell how to suck eggs and stuff. You have to tell people how to do their job. There's some friends, colleagues that you have to sort of, you say you're not quite good enough to do this gig, or can you do it this way? You're fucking it up. Do it this way. Don't fuck around. Do it this way. So it becomes a weird sort of employment thing where it's like, oh man, we're not just on the same level anymore. We're not just friends. This is I'm paying you to do a job now.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of stories I want to talk about, but just in terms of yourself, do you think that's been better or worse for your development as a comedian?
Oh, man. It's, you know, from the outside looking in, some people think that, you know, it's getting into running regular comedy rooms is like, you know, elevates you. But I don't really think it does, because I don't think anyone goes, oh, man, you run a room, come and be on my TV show. Like, it literally doesn't work like that. It's like, and that even when people introduce me to other gigs, they'll say, they'll be thinking of like a credit for you. They'll say, oh, look, Des, you know, this guy was on the Melbourne Comedy Festival Gala. Give it up.
Yeah.
With me, literally, this is what idiots do around at local rooms. They'll go, this guy runs another room that's not this room. Give it up, Carl Chandler. And people are like, we don't give a fuck. Like, my big credit is basically admin. Like, no one, it's not like you may have laughed at this guy. Oh, this guy fucking took change at
this
the door.
He's good at organizing shit.
Yeah, he's got a fucking sweet Rolodex. Give it up for this guy.
Yeah. But on the flip side, I guess, for me at that time, and I'm sure for you, the positive is that I hosted that show for a long time. And particularly in those early years for me, I mean, times have changed, so tourism has really started to kick in for like crowds. But in my day, it was really about the regulars. And then that forced me to sort of be a bit looser.
Yeah.
It forced me to change it up. Yep. Maybe look for the bit of madness.
Yeah.
I think that's a positive.
Yeah, I do. I set myself that thing, especially coming up to Comedy Festival, where I'll put myself on it, like that room we did tonight, Comedy Explain. I put myself on there every week, and because you know that there's going to be regulars there every week, I do brand new every week. And it doesn't matter if you do good or bad. Like, even if you're doing like stuff that doesn't work, my job is to dig myself out of it and to make even the bad stuff good, or you know what I mean, like just to have no fear to get up and do brand new every single week. And
you're not going to give out to yourself.
Yeah,
you're not going to not book yourself.
Exactly. There's no one to sweat. There's no one up the back giving me the light. There's no one up the back going, well, this guy, he had four jokes that didn't work, let's not put him on next week. No, I'm going to put myself on every fucking week. So yeah, it's good that way for testing and just for getting gigs. Just, you know what, you run a good gig, that means you can have a good gig every week because you're always going to book yourself.
So we're just coming to the end of Victoria Parade onto Victoria Street. Am I right?
You can do this totally.
Honestly, at that moment, I was just showing off my
my
geographical awareness of Melbourne. Know it well enough that I could bang out a podcast while sort of heading the right direction to Hawthorne without asking you how to get there.
I'm not going to give you any directions. Let's see how close you get to my house. All I'll do is give you warmer and colder.
All right, well, we're behind the number 12 tram now, just because I know that, well, certainly my promoter listens to this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that...
to my podcast. Oh, to your podcast.
Well, to yours, too.
And to mine, too.
To mine. And she said to me that she likes the driving ones because, you know, you like to think about where you are and stuff. So since she's a Melbourne woman... I'll have to let her know that I'm now following the number 12 heading down Victoria Street in Abbotsford, I believe, is the official neighborhood that we're in.
Yeah,
right now.
So it's a very Asian-y restaurant sort of neighborhood.
Are we at the Asian-y section?
Yeah, this is starting right now. Yeah,
oh, okay,
both sides.
Yeah. So this little hood.
Yeah. Also, very good spot for buying heroin, by the way. So,
oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that is good to know if the festival gets me down. So there was so many things that I found tough about dealing with the comics, and
yep.
one of them was the sort of eternal open spot, the guy that just never gets better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not that they're bad people. I like them. That's part of the problem is like when they're off the stage, I like them. There was this one guy years ago, and I loved talking to him. He was a super interesting guy. He was a civil servant in his day job, and he was a really interesting guy, but he was just terrible on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say I did enjoy his terribleness, but yeah, that's like only, you know, we can only enjoy that.
Yeah.
In our
normal people don't enjoy bad comics, but comics can enjoy bad comics.
He called me time and time again.
Yep.
And back in those days, I only had one open spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, like as the years went on, like more and more people wanted to start doing them. I just hated having to say to this guy, listen, man, I got nothing for you.
It's so tough to talk to people that don't, like this is the thing I think comes up in comedy a lot, where it's hard to talk to someone who just it does badly on stage, but for some reason doesn't understand that they're doing badly on stage.
Yeah, what is that? Yeah, and again, this is not, I want people to know, we're not shitting on other comics.
No.
It's just like...
But this is just something that comes up in our workplace. So it's a very interesting thing to me where I would say, I always compare it to this. If you're, if you're an artist and you do bad art, it's sort of hard to, it's hard to get that feedback because it's all, you know, a matter of taste and whatever. It's on a wall. You don't get that immediate feedback. It's just sitting on a wall. Whereas you do comedy, if no one laughs, that's the barometer. That means that you're not good. That means you're not doing well. So, and if you get a lot of laughs, that means you're doing well. So to me, that's as black and white as you can get. But for some reason, still, people don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has bad gigs. It's not about
gig. It's not like a one-off.
But when it's all the time.
Yeah, totally.
Then it becomes, like, how have they not noticed?
Even to this degree, where I've seen a bad comic that's done badly every time, and you go, okay, well, maybe they think that that's how a good gig goes, and then you see them fluke, and they have a really good gig, and I feel like saying to them, well, now you know. That's what they're supposed to sound like. That should, in your head, that should mean that all those other ones you did were terrible, and you should now go, fuck, most of my gigs are terrible, you know, in comparison to that.
Yeah. And then I tell you what was it. Well, I tell you what was done to me, and then I considered that to be the norm, the standard. When I first moved up to Dublin from Cork, because I was in college in Cork in 1997, I started doing gigs, but I was like going up and down to Dublin. When I first moved up to Dublin, I had started to get a bit of a name for myself amongst the sort of early, you know, like the people that were just starting out.
Right.
And so I got bumped up to 20-minute spots at the International. Thursday nights, Joe Rooney, before I ran it. And then my first 20-minute spot, I stank it up.
Right.
Bad.
Yep.
And it was just clear that I didn't have fucking 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I called Joe Rooney. He's like, I'm sorry, man, but I don't have 20-minute spots for you. I got to put you back to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it fucking killed me.
Yeah.
It killed me.
Yeah.
And the next time I went up on that stage, I was like, I'll fucking show this cunt fucking 10 minutes. And I fucking ripped the shit out of it.
Yeah.
And then he gave me 20 minutes. But that's how I responded to it.
Yeah.
My experience was...
Right.
When I passed on that method...
Yeah.
That a lot of people got angry at me.
Yeah, totally. That my theory is that the weird thing about running a room is that people only ever get pissed off with you. That people are only ever mad with you about stuff. They never. People always go, I deserve this, I deserve that. How come I haven't got this? How come I haven't got that? No one ever goes, thank you for giving me this thing because I don't really deserve it.
Yeah, and it's interesting because one of the reasons why I wanted to chat to you was because Beck, who is my promoter, I was just joking around about that, listens to this. I had said to her, I was like, God, Carl Chandler runs a lot of great rooms. You know, like that's like a serious service that's going down in Melbourne because there's just not a lot of gigs, you know? And so I was going to ask you because like, it's not like, again, you don't want to sound like you're coming off like moaning. But like I always, because my brother runs the International now and he would never like me to use him as an example because like, but like nobody turns around and goes, hey, if you weren't running these shows, there'd be five less great gigs in Dublin.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
And like those gigs that he runs are good Dublin gigs that actually pay a bit.
Yeah.
And you run these rooms. Nobody turns around and goes, what the fuck would we do if you weren't doing this little hustle?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's like, I expect that. I think you're doing things for the wrong reason if you're waiting for someone to say thank you in comedy, because they're not going to say it.
Of course, I mean, it's very hard to articulate without sounding like a moan, because it's not a moan. It's just the sense of like, nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, and I guess I didn't give a fuck on other gigs too. Yeah. You know, I guess I didn't. But on the flip side, I think I gave a fuck a bit, because when possible, I still support, you know, like say you take your notoriety back to places that helped you out.
Totally. And I do
think...
And
there are some comics that do that and some don't.
Totally. I agree. And I think... But the nice thing is, to be honest, the nice thing that the people that usually notice that sort of stuff, in my experience, the people who go on and do really good things... The people who appreciate what you do, the people who come back and say thanks, they're the people that usually have got the good enough people skills to go on and be successful and stuff.
Right, interesting.
Yeah, I tend to think that they're nearly, you know, like married to each other, those two sort of pieces of people.
The other thing that used to bother me when I was running gigs was guys would ask me when they were going to headline.
Oh, really?
And
yeah.
I would say, you mean... when you're going to happen to be on last because it's convenient for you to be on last. Like currently you open because I just need you there.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's kind of where you're at the moment. But the day that I have you on last will not be because you're the best comic on the bill. It will be because you happen to be on last.
Right.
So I always found it weird that, like, guys had this thing in their head that, like, they're the headliner. It's like, dude, the headliner means you're the top of the bill. You're selling the tickets.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's I find that interesting. Like, I don't get it as much anymore, but I used to get a bit of that with MCs that would then go, all right, I want a headline, I want a headline. And I would say, I'd have to have arguments with them and say, the headline, I mean, I don't know how it works over in Dublin, but in Melbourne, there's, say, 30 different people that can sell tickets to get in, as in famous headliners that are on radio or TV or whatever it is, right?
I don't want to fuck you with your flow, but that was a fork in the road, and I'm not that confident.
I know. I just wanted to see which way you're going. My house is... we've gone past it way back there. But yeah. I just wanted to see until you said something. Well, we're actually driving to my girlfriend's parents' house right now. We're not.
Oh, that would be great. Let's go chat to them.
Yeah, they love comedy.
I'll do a
Yui here. Do a Yui whenever you want.
Okay.
But yeah, going back to the headliners and MC, people would say to me, when am I going to headline? I want a headline. I'm like, cool. As soon as people buy tickets off the fact that your face is on a poster, sure, but it's not happening because you're not on TV, you're not on radio, you're not on anything. So what all you're asking for me to do is to fuck my gig up, have your face on a poster, and then no one comes, and then I can't pay you. So, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to give you...
Well, you're fucking hardcore. I love it.
Oh, well, but if you say that, then they don't have any argument. Like, there's no use me going, oh, maybe, and then they come back and ask the next week. If you turn left here, if you want.
Yeah, I'll take left here, yeah.
So, yeah, until you can sell tickets, then... that's the ironic thing, of course, because those people that would hound me, some of those people have now turned into headliners. Now that they're famous, they're on TV, they're on radio... now they don't want the gig.
Yeah, now it's like, hey man, you can headline now.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, come and headline. Fuck that. I got to get up early for breakfast radio. Yeah. I want to be on first now. Oh, literally, now they want to be on first so they can get to bed and get up and do radio.
So in Dublin, it's been an explosion of people looking for spots.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't have to deal with that. I passed on the baton before it got out of control. My problem was finding comics.
Right.
Back in my day.
Wow.
Like, oh, shit. Fucking Thursday afternoon. I still don't have, I still don't have like a rock solid 20.
Right.
To put in the show. Be ringing around. I still, like, all those numbers are still in my head. I won't say them out loud.
Oh, really?
Some of the people still have the phone. But, like, I had everyone's number off my heart to be ringing around, like, begging.
Wow.
You know?
I don't even know my girlfriend's phone number. And you've still got open microphone numbers from 10 years ago.
No, I have, like, guys like... Ian Coppinger. I mean, you might not know some of these guys, but like Ian Coppinger, John Henderson, Joe Rooney, Carl Spain.
Right.
Some people's old numbers that they don't have anymore, like Deirdre O'Kane's old number, because I just had to ring those people all the time.
Right.
Whereas nowadays, my brother's problem is there's just so many comedians looking for spots.
Yeah.
Do you have the same problem?
I have a little bit. I kind of think it's slightly different for me, maybe, because there's a lot more gigs now, so I think people are not lining up as much. That they just, you know what, instead of doing a good gig, I find that open micers now go, that instead of wishing to get on at Spleen or whatever it is, they don't even bother. They just go, you know what, instead of coming and watching a gig or checking out a gig like that, I'll just go and do the absolute biggest toilet of a gig that's like down the street instead. Like, I'd rather go and play to three people than line up and try and ask for a spot at Spleen or a full room. Yeah. So I don't get that many. And plus, I think kind of like, you know, I get a bit of a reputation for they think, oh, this guy's a hard ass, so you know, I won't even bother.
But I think you just get that rep. Like I feel like my brother got a bit of that rep because you just have to say no.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's so tough. Yeah. You know, like it, I sound like a broken record just saying like,
I can't make it any easier. Like I said, we design this gig on a Monday night and it's always full and it's always great, and we design it in a way that, you know, if we started now, we would be able to get on. So the way we do that is to make all the comics as great as we can and then leave a couple of spots left for new guys. So all those new guys need to do is come down and ask for a spot or line up and sign up for a spot in 2 months' time or in a month's time or whatever it is. But still some people just go, oh, fuck that then. I'd rather go home and complain about it and not get on. So left here.
It's tough starting out though, man, when I think back, you know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, in my head, I reckon it'd be easier now because there's so many more gigs. And I don't know what it's like in Dublin now, but when I started,
there's more gigs now.
Yeah. Well, when I started, you know, 10, 11 years ago, there was like a couple of gigs a week. And, you know, if you did one gig a week, that's pretty cool. But now,
but it was worse in Melbourne. Like it's unbelievable that a city the size of Melbourne with a festival the size of Melbourne had such a bad scenario.
Yeah, sure.
Which is why I was sort of semi-thinking that you deserve the praise, because to run as many rooms as you do now in a city that didn't have a lot of gigs is...
Yeah, well, it was even about 5 years ago, like, I still run about the same amount of gigs, but that meant they were nearly the only gigs in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Whereas now there's a few... To be honest, like, you know, this sounds a bit stupid or whatever, but a few people have sort of asked my advice and whatever, and now they run other good gigs because they've sort of used my model or they have asked how to do it, and I've given them advice.
Well, I always say
stuff.
The same thing to people. It's like, yo, you can't just look after your friends. You got to have standards.
Yeah, totally.
Because what happens a lot of times is guys say, I can't get a gig there, I'll start my own gig, which is a good reason to start a gig. But the problem is that you very quickly find out that the things that annoyed you about the last place, if you don't do them yourself, you got a problem. Let me talk to you about your current show.
My solo show.
I want to remember the...
Yeah.
The world's best comedian in the world.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
That is the name of the title.
Yeah.
But it's a unique show.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I hope it is. I don't know if anyone else has done it, but yeah. It's what it is me. I've got my set of stand-up, and then I get a heckler every night. And by heckler, I mean I get another comedian that I think would be funny, that I know slightly, that I think has got a good sense of humor and would fit into this concept. And they basically sit side of stage, and they make me justify the title by heckling me. And they can do that, and it's interesting to find out how other comics approach it.
You see
a little bit of like what people are like as a comic and as a person, because everyone approaches it a different way. The people come in and take it very literally. Some people come in and just try and burn me as hard as I can.
Right, really.
Like they treat it like a competition to try and break me, to try and bust the show apart, which I always find interesting because it's like, it's like they're trying to wreck the show, and you go, that's technically heckling, yeah, but the goal is to also make it funny and to, you know, to make a fun show and whatever.
Yes, yes.
Whereas some people don't have that cunt in them, and so they just come in and go, well, we'll just do our version, and they might come in and just sort of be conversational and so just be part of it and be jumping in. And sometimes people don't even say anything negative at all, but I think it's...
Oh, sometimes people don't say anything negative?
Yeah, yeah.
Because my inclination was to not say anything negative, but then I thought I had to.
Yeah, yeah, sure. You know, look, and that's the other thing of how people think they're supposed to do it. They like double guess or whatever. But I think that's funny, like especially if a joke doesn't work, then jump in and say whatever the fuck you want. And you know, like you did, so you did it tonight and it was great. It's like a smaller crowd. It was a cold Monday night.
Yeah, so it wasn't like, but it was good.
It was
fun.
It was fine. So, and it was fun. Like there was enough, the ideal show, the perfect show in my eyes is always, I get on, I have fun, the jokes work, the heckler works, me and you talking back and forth works, and it's all fun. And I feel like most of that happened tonight. Like, it was good. Yeah. It was fine. Like, they...
No, I think it's a good exercise.
I mean, sometimes the audience is genuinely a bit confused as to why there is someone yelling at me in the show. So sometimes it takes a little while for people to figure that out. And they think... Like, I've literally heard people's opinions about it going, is this... So, like, on a bad night, like, sometimes everything works. Most of the time, everything works. The jokes work, the heckle works. People understand that we're friends and it's all supposed to be funny. There's some nights where it doesn't work and people literally walk out going, so, were your jokes on purpose supposed to be shit just so that guy could be funny? And I'm like, no, that's not actually how it's... That's extra bad. That's extra embarrassing.
Yeah, but then again, like... Any show can be shit on any particular night.
Totally.
So, but the problem with your show, in the sense of if it's gone bad, people will think, oh, why did you bother having the heckler? It ruined it.
Yeah.
Whereas in actual fact, some nights just don't kick off.
Exactly. Some people have come out on a bad night and gone, oh, that guy really wrecked your show. You really shouldn't have got that guy in. And it's like, no, it didn't really work like that. And then some people come out and go, like, just get rid of that, or you know, you like I said, like, your jokes, that's great for you to write deliberately bad jokes just so that guy could be funny. And again, I'm like, no, that's not how it works at all. Like, come back another night and watch a full house laugh at the jokes.
Yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So you seem to be, because you have the Little Dum Dum Club, which is your podcast, which is very successful. And there may even be some people in Ireland that listen to that, because it's doing very well, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got Irish listeners. Yeah.
And then you're doing all these sort of like other things, like the roasts and that. Like, you're quite experimental with, the, you know, like the group stuff.
Yeah. So we do a thing called, like, we did it the other night. We did a roast, which was... we just picked one of our friends, one of our more popular guests, Dilruk Jaisinghe, and then we did an American style, so that everyone came on and roasted each other, and it went really, really, really well. And then on top of that, we are doing, in a couple of days' time, what we do is during the Melbourne Comedy Festival, there will be four shows usually, four live podcasts, and then we do this weird thing where we go, okay, if you buy a season pass, you get to go to our little end of night party, end of festival party for free if you've got this festival pass. And then if we can fit all you guys in, then we will also let in, basically at random, someone who's bought one ticket to one of the shows. So it's a completely free show, and it's on at 11 o'clock on the last night of the festival, and all it is an unrecorded podcast. So it's all, you know, say what the fuck you want, and we get very drunk.
So-
Before we go on stage.
Am I allowed to let the secret out about what an unrecorded podcast is?
Okay, sure.
The fact that you keep saying it's an unrecorded podcast, I just have to point out that that is just a gig.
Yeah.
Traditionally, that has been known as a gig.
Yeah, but man, if you see this show, you would go, man, that's...
It's an unrecorded podcast.
Yeah. Because that describes it better, because if you called it a gig, you'd go, that's not fucking good enough to be a gig. Like, that's just a bunch of idiots on stage yelling at each other.
It's like a Wu-Tang album. It can only
You
can only be appreciated once.
Yeah. We were literally talking about that the other day. We said we should record it because we try and make people jealous so they're not going, so they make a real effort to come along. And we just said the other day, like, we should record it and just make one copy of it and do like Wu-Tang and just sell that one copy for as much as we can to just one other person. But I think that would get us in a lot of trouble because it's very libelous. And also, the good thing is that when you're doing a live podcast, you're always trying to make sure that it works audio-wise as well.
Yes.
But because it's an unrecorded podcast, or people aka just a show, like you said, you can be visual. So, like, we dress up and we do all, you know, we do a lot of crowd surfing, which people used to really get excited about, but then we just did it over and over and over and over and over, and now people get really pissed off.
Now it's just a burden.
Yeah. People just now make sure they don't sit in the middle so they have to carry us. They just, like, get out onto the sides.
Like, see people, like, warming up their shoulders before they go into your show.
Yeah, and people, and there's, like, crush chairs afterwards because we have some fatter guests and whatever that, like, literally smash chairs when people fall over and stuff.
So it gets pretty chaotic.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to ask you was, with the heckling and that, like, you're doing a lot of sort of group interactive stuff.
Yeah.
Like, where else can you take, like, if you're doing so much of that, why don't you try to sort of, you know, take it, like, okay, the little dum-dum, like, how come there's not, like, a panel show in Australia? How come there's nothing that is tapping into that sort of vibe?
Yeah, well, man, that's also a really good question. Like, I mean, there's been a lot of success with what we're...
I mean, I can't stand when people say to me, hey, you know what you should be doing? But just in the sense that you have all these people that are willing to sort of be interactive like that, surely there's...
Well, I think, you know what, like, I mean, you'd know this, but, like, industry people can be weird and whatever, and it's... I've almost put myself outside that sort of stuff now where, you know, we do a podcast and it makes some money now and, you know, we do all these live shows and they're really successful. And you get to a point where you stop trying to impress industry people because what are you trying to do there? You're trying to get them to say, come and do our thing that pays you this much money and put you out to this many people. Well, we've started to go, hang on, we already have access to this many people. We already get paid this much money. Like, so if we can get that other stuff, cool. But at the moment, what we've got is sort of pretty cool. Yeah. And we've sort of found out, even recently, we've sort of found out we now sort of are the industry in a little way. Like, we did that roast the other night. And the next morning, we're just fielding messages and calls from people that are getting really pissed off. Like, these open mic, you know, like we're talking about before, people, but, like, famous people going, why the fuck wasn't I on this show? Why wasn't I on this show? And it's like, oh, man, now we're the gatekeepers. Instead of we're the ones knocking to get in, we're the ones accidentally keeping people out or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it's sort of true. Like, the podcast gets popular and... you know, people start talking about it online, then suddenly it's like, that's where the energy is.
Yeah.
Because the energy has moved, hasn't it?
Yeah. So, like, now that we can make money, now that we've got all these listeners and all that sort of stuff, it's like, well, the industry or whatever, I still don't think people quite understand, like, that other stuff, like podcasts. They don't know how to, you know, exploit it. They don't know what the next level is. I'm so surprised, like, it's, you know, because it's quite popular and we never get approached by anyone to, like, you know, by management or by radio or by TV. They all just go, oh, yeah, whatever, we don't really get it or whatever. And we're like, okay, well, fuck, we're making quite a bit of money off it. Like, if I was you, I'd be trying to leech onto it and get some of this cash. But anyway, that's up to you guys, I guess. You see managers, what they understand is, like, stand-up or whatever, so they grab these people in these, like, that might fill a 30-seater, 40-seater room and go, oh, we'll get this guy instead. It's like, man, we did a podcast last year that was 500 people, a live podcast, 500 people, and you go, why doesn't anyone want a piece of this? But anyway, that's their call, you know.
I guess in a way, part of it has to do with, say, particularly with radio in Australia, because it's such a successful medium and such a lucrative medium that hasn't been, like, disrupted yet.
Yeah.
That they probably go, well, these guys can't do that on their thing.
But you know what? I mean, things are changing because just little examples that we see, like, you know, we'll get a little bit of a sponsorship and then people own podcasts a bit more. People are, like, really into it and they know that we're making it for them, for ourselves and for those guys and for no one else. So they get really, you know, attached to it. So if we have a little sponsorship, they really do their best to go, we're going to go out and buy that thing because they're supporting you and we'll tweet about it online and we'll do all that stuff because that gets back to the company and then that company goes, oh, fuck, Little Dum Dum Club, they're cool. All right, well, we get a lot of feedback from it. Whereas we hear from some radio people, like, we've heard radio people say, man, we don't hear anything like that. Like, people sort of turn off with radio these days. Like, we'll give out something for free on radio and it's like a major radio show and no one will ring up for it. No, they will get no feedback. They'll have to be pushing people to ring up and do some talk back and stuff.
So when do you think the real disruption will happen? Like, in the sense that what technological advancement will have to happen that the Little Dum Dum Club is what Frank on his way to work listens to between 8 and 9 on a Monday morning?
Yeah, well, man, I don't know, because I feel like I'm already part of that, those people, because I don't listen to the radio. Like, my radio's been broken in my car for 6 years and I've never gotten it fixed because I just, why?
Listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I don't want to. Like, I don't even listen to podcasts that much, but I don't want to listen to the radio. So, and that's what we get a lot of, you know, just the podcasts in general, and you probably get the same, but you just get hit up by people going, you are a big part of our lives now because I have to drive a fucking ice truck in fucking Canada or whatever it is.
Yeah, people say to me, you get me through the commute in the morning. Yeah. Or, you know, a lot of people, oddly enough, because I can only listen to music when I'm jogging, a lot of people tell me I get them through their jog.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that's interesting because, yeah, I think our fans don't jog that much, but I've seen them at the live shows. They don't do a lot of that exercise.
But I'm curious myself in terms of, like, when, because obviously television has been disrupted. Netflix has fucking chucked up the thing.
Yeah.
The fact that YouTube people can make millions of dollars, like all that stuff. There's like loads of disruption everywhere. But I feel like even though podcasting is hugely popular, there doesn't seem to be any great fear in the radio industry of how it's going to change the game over there.
Yeah. I think that's right. And I don't know everything about radio, but I think those guys in radio, they just haven't changed it. They haven't been made to change it. So they're like, it's still the same people in charge of all the radio stuff from 10, 15 years ago. And for some reason, they're still not, looking at anything else. I don't know why.
Yeah, but I have a funny feeling that it's going to be down to a technological change in cars. I personally think that when cars are just, I know that a lot of cars have Wi-Fi now and stuff. Like, I know that a lot of cars are online. But I think when car radios just become entirely digital, like, I do think that the dial will change, the way that we interact with the radio will change.
Right. Well, I kind of feel like the people in charge of radio at the moment are still the people in charge from 20 years ago. So they haven't caught up. They haven't figured it out yet. Once new people are in charge that have been through the generations of podcasts and understand that sort of thing,
yeah,
I think those older guys are still don't quite, like, even older guys in management are the same. They don't quite understand the podcast thing yet.
Yeah, but I even think I'm just thinking about the consumer. Like,
yeah.
I think the 50-year-old dude that gets in his car, to this day, he's just not as inclined to just, like, have his iPhone in the USB or just have the iPhone automatically go into Bluetooth and then just click a podcast, because it's actually pretty simple to listen to a podcast on your car now, but it just still seems a bit fiddly.
Yeah,
but eventually it won't be fiddly, and that's when I think things will really start to change.
Yeah, sure. Look, you know, our numbers go up all the time, and I guess podcast numbers, you know, everyone's numbers go up all the time. I think more and more people are listening to it.
But how do you get, where are you getting your numbers, by the way?
From, like, Libsyn, I think. Yeah, from our hosting site.
Oh, yeah. So I get mine from SoundCloud. So I hate asking you this live on the way, the air. But so, like, you just trust that number? Because I was never sure. So I see, like, SoundCloud, say, listens, right? Is that taking in all of the... So is that, like, when someone listens on iTunes, that's going in on SoundCloud as a thing?
Man,
or is that just a SoundCloud listen?
Man, I have to say, I have no idea. Like, I don't do that side of it. Like, the other guy on the podcast, Tommy Dassler, he accesses all that sort of stuff. So every now and then I just go, how many listeners have we got now? And he goes, this many. I'm like, oh, cool. So, man, I don't know. Cool.
Yeah, I'm sorry for drilling you on that.
No, that's fine, because I literally don't know. All I know is, like, we'll go and do a round of, like, we tour the country a couple of times a year. And every time we go back to a city, the numbers go up. And so we'll go back to a city and it'll go up again. And I'll go,
Do you charge for your podcast gigs?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. Which is great, because it's like that thing of going, you know, like, we just sold out all of our shows in Melbourne. And it's a sweet little con. Con's a bad word for it. But, like, you know, the episode goes up 3 days later for free. So it's like, sure.
What, you sure you want to say this out loud?
Well, people know. Surely they know.
Yeah, they want the live experience.
Exactly. No one's going, oh, this is the one chance to hear it. But then that's why we do those unique gigs. Like, for example, the roast. That's not going out. So that's sold out really
early.
That's
an unrecorded podcast.
Well, yeah, sorry.
That is an unrecorded
podcast. Exactly. And, like, the drunk cast that's coming up, like, that's unrecorded. So no matter what, there'll be people in Melbourne that'll still hit us up going, so when are you going to upload that? And it's like, we're fucking not. You have
it's
to come to it.
Unrecorded podcast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a
not
gig.
Recorded.
It's a gig.
So, do you ever kind of think, fuck comedy? Because it just, this is so much more fun, what we're doing with the podcast.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, a little bit. Because, you know, we, and again.
Well, fuck like, stand-up, I should say.
Yeah, 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 right. Well, with you, I mean, you're doing your podcast, but you're more known for your stand-up. But whereas I'm the opposite. We've got this popular podcast and, you know, we've got a bit of a running joke that, you know, you go and do the podcast and there's like 250 people there. And it's like, my stand-up show is in the basement straight after the gig. Who's coming? And there's two people put their hand up. And so you literally, like, you know, yesterday was a good example. Literally, I went from 250 people in the live podcast. 5 minutes later, my stand-up show started downstairs and I went down there and we had 55 people. So, like, that's cool. That makes sense. You can't have everyone go to everything. But there's a real sense of the podcast fans like the podcast and they like it more than the stand-up. And yeah. They're not all of a sudden
so
go to stand-up.
Yeah, so sometimes in your own brain you think, wow, maybe I need to just focus all my...
Yeah, time. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've got to... Like, I sort of have arguments with Tommy, with the other guy on the podcast, Tommy, a little bit because he gets a bit frustrated with it. And I just go, man, you just gotta remember that, appreciate the fact that someone likes you for something. Like, you know, you've got the podcast and all these people love it. Cool, just be cool with that. Yeah. Like, you can't have everything. Like, I understand it, and this sounds like such a fucked allegory for it, but I always think, you know what, if the Rolling Stones come out and play the Tennis Center, it's going to be sold out within 2 seconds. If Mick Jagger comes out and plays a solo show, it won't be sold out in 2 minutes. Like, because it's only part of the thing that they like. It's not the main thing. Like, people love the Rolling Stones, but they don't love, you know, they're not going to come out and watch Charlie Watts drum. Yeah. That's only part of that thing that they
love.
I mean,
every time I haven't had a decent-sized crowd.
Right.
I like to think about Mick Jagger.
Yeah. I also hope that you enjoy the comparison that I think I'm fucking like the Rolling Stones, by the way. Yeah.
I loved it, man.
Yeah.
I just thought, now there is some Tony Robbins positive thinking. There is some Tony Robbins positive thinking right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, no, I totally get it. You know, and I think it's great because you guys were early in the game of podcasting. And
yeah.
It's fun to watch that shit, and it's amazing how loyal people get when it comes to podcasts.
Oh man, yeah, it's crazy. And like I was saying to you before, we sell t-shirts and merch and stuff, and it's really cool because so many of them wear their shirts to the gigs and even to the solo shows, which I kind of feel is cool because they not only, you know, are they supporting us, but they're just letting us know that we've got a bit of a home crowd in the crowd tonight or whatever. They go, yeah, yeah, we know, but we've got this weird thing with our podcast where they're not always like, we love, like, they're never like, we love you. Like, we see other podcasts that are like really popular podcasts and they even do a bit of like a Q&A session after the show and they go, if you pay another $10, you get to come and, you know, like meet us and meet us backstage. Whereas we don't have that love. Like, they really like the show, but they love to hang shit on us instead. Like, they got this real thing where they go, you know, if they drive past us, they'll just yell out the car and go, fuck you, or whatever. They're, like, really negative towards us, but they think that we like that because we rag
that's,
each other.
Yeah, yeah, because you guys
we rag each other. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
that's, like, Opie and Anthony kind of vibe, like, back in the day.
Right, okay.
Do you know about them?
I know of them, but I haven't listened.
They were kind of, like, the offspring of Howard Stern to a degree. Like, right. As a concept, not they didn't come from Howard Stern, but
yeah,
Shock Jock, and they don't do it anymore. But they had really like fucking like not shitty fans, but just like
yeah, pretty aggressive. And
yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I feel we've got a version of that because like there's a running gag in the show. Which, it's not a gag; it's just an actual thing that's sort of funny. Is that Daslo gave my phone number out years ago, and this is when the podcast wasn't that big.
Oh,
and
is that why I came up Carl Chandler's phone number?
Where?
I put it in Google.
Oh, you Google me. Yeah, exactly. That's the number one thing people Google me for, my phone number, because it went out on an episode years and years and years ago.
No, you know what? I Googled your name because I wanted to... Before you got back to me and said the show's at 8:15, I was checking to see if I'd missed the show already. This is before I said I would definitely do the heckling. And so, yeah, I put in Carl Chandler because I was going to put in Melbourne International Comedy Festival. And Carl Chandler's phone number came
Yeah, out. Yeah, yeah. So it comes out there. Daslo puts it out there years ago and says it on air. And then I just think, oh, well, it doesn't matter. We don't have that many listeners. It doesn't matter. But then, of course, the podcast gets bigger and bigger. And, you know, I get a few calls that week and whatever. But then it just never stops. And if anything, it's just multiplied. And so,
why don't you change your number?
That's what everyone asks me. And I always go, well, it's just going to be a pain to give out to everyone and start again and all that. And all the people that ring me through all these different jobs and all the millions of things that I do. I'm just going to lose work. I just get this fear I'm going to lose business and lose work and whatever. But I think somehow I've trained the listeners to now I don't get as much abuse. I used to get a lot of abuse and them sign me up to all this fucked stuff. But now it's sort of calmed down a bit. And there's not one day where I don't get calls or text messages, but they're generally positive now. They're generally positive. I just talked about on the latest episode that someone very recently signed. I don't know how the fuck they did this, but they changed. If you Googled the number for Guzman E. Gomez in South Yarra, it came up as my number. So I was getting a lot of complaints that people's burritos were cold. A lot of people ringing up going, why the fuck haven't my tacos turned up? And I could not figure out how they did it. And I could not get it to stop. And it went on for weeks and weeks and weeks. And until I started just playing with it and people would ring up and I'd be like, fuck me. You know, I just pretended to be there. And I was like, yeah, Guzman speaking. Gomez is out. And they're like, and then I'd be like, fuck, man, I make a lot of burritos. It's hard to keep track of which ones have gone out or not. Man, call back later. I don't care. I don't know.
Did you ever think about calling them and being like, listen, man?
Well, in the end, it just got too much. And then I pleaded with someone, tell me where you found the number. And they, one of them, because people would just get angry at me all the time through it. But then finally someone just went, it's right here. And then I found it and I rang Guzman E. Gomez and said, my number is somehow your number online now. And then they said, we're so sorry. I don't know how we made that mistake. We'll give you all these free burritos. I'm like, fuck yeah. All right.
Now they're sponsored the podcast.
Yeah. Sort of.
This section is brought to you by Guzman Brothers Burritos.
So that's the sort of people that like our show, right? That's how they show their love.
It's a devilish bit of crack with all that.
Yeah. So that's why we never call them fans. Because fans seems like people that love us, whereas these guys don't really. So our merch is, instead of we love Little Dum Dum Club, our merch says, on our t-shirts, it says, we're aware of the Little Dum Dum Club. Because they don't love us. They just know of us.
So basically, like, your whole vibe, like, heckling and... Basically, it's all about like the entertainment of being abused.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I feel like that's what people want. So, like, and the other thing is, I give it out plenty. So I always feel like I've got an absolute right to, you know, I need to be able to take it. So, you know, I put my head on a stick, ready for fucking someone to kick it in, because I give it out a lot. So I'm like, man, we'll bring it back. I would hate to be the guy that couldn't take it. So. Yeah, pour it on, whatever you want, you know, and people tend to enjoy me giving it out and getting it back. So it works for me, it's fine. Yeah.
And would you say, I'll leave you on there because it's quarter past 12
yeah.
at night, by the way. This podcast is being recorded at midnight after two shows.
Yeah.
Would you think the more men listen to your podcast?
Definitely.
Sounds a bit male.
Yeah. Definitely.
Sounds like the lads having the crack.
Yeah. I think generally, like, man, there's still plenty of girls that listen. But having said that, I'm always surprised when girls come up and go, oh, I love it. I'm like, yeah, it is pretty sort of like, not. I wouldn't say it's alpha, but it is pretty aggressive with all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But like, it's not like me. If you look at me and Tommy, the host, and you wouldn't go, fuck, check out those two alphas.
Yeah.
So I think there's still that vulnerability of two fucking idiots that, you know, still haven't been to the gym or whatever it is. But generally, I think the stats are, I always say 66% is guys and 33% girls, I think. I think roughly is that. And I think that's probably about right.
On my Facebook posts, you know, when I do like Facebook posts and I look at the analytics, it's the opposite.
Yeah. Well, you're a good looking guy. That's why.
It's starting to worry me. I feel like, you know, I feel like I need to get that shit back to 50-50, man.
Yeah, well.
I'm going to have to start maybe like little dumb-dumbing this podcast.
Yeah.
Getting a bit shitty with people.
Be more of an arsehole. Yeah, yeah. The guys tend to like that and the girls don't like that as much, but.
I know, yeah.
And whenever the girls like, to be honest, whenever the girls like it, I'm always like, thanks for listening, but what's wrong? Yeah. What happened to you?
Because it's kind of, yeah, it's just like a male sense of humor.
Yeah, did you have a dad that used to hang shit on you every day or something? Yeah. Is that what you want?
That's the vibe. Yeah. Anyway, man, listen, get on with your life.
Yeah,
thank you for doing me the favor of, you know, getting another driving around podcast. Even though we've been, it's like my dad used to go to AA meetings and fucking, he'd sit outside for an hour in the car after getting dropped off. I feel like, you know, we've been sitting outside your place now for like 25 minutes.
That's fine. Thanks for doing my show tonight, because a guy pulled out of... my show out of the heckle position.
Yeah, who was it?
A guy called Josh Earl, comedian called Josh Earl.
Oh, Josh Earl dropped out.
Yeah, he dropped out, which always surprises me because usually the comics in Melbourne are lining up to hang shit on me. So it's always weird when someone can't make it.
But he has a kid.
He has a kid. I think he had another gig as well. So,
right,
yeah.
Okay.
But I really appreciate you coming in at the last second.
No problem. It literally was a block and a half from my flat.
Yeah.
So it was fine, and I was grateful for the shows, especially... that Thursday night gig, which was just a real blast.
Yeah. Oh, and the Saturday night gig you did. That was great. You killed it.
Oh, when I had to file Stephen K. Amos.
Yeah, well, I know we're trying to wrap it up, but I do find this funny, and you should appreciate this as a room runner, but I did find that very funny where you had to follow Stephen K. Amos, and he was killing, and he was probably doing a
little... And he's famous here.
Yeah.
People that don't know back at home...
He's very
Stephen
big
K.
in Australia.
Stephen K. Amos is a UK comedian, but he's very famous
here. He's very big here, but... He was in a hot, it was a hot room. The room was great. The show was so good. Everyone was absolutely destroying.
Killed.
Absolutely destroying. And you came in and you had to follow him. And you're like stressing about it and going, oh. And I said, and I was like, shut the fuck up. Everyone is killing. And I said, and I, as I've said to other people in the same position, I was like, you know what? I don't want to hear this shit now. You go and do your gig. If you don't do well, then come back and complain. We'll deal
but
with it then.
You didn't say that to me.
Yeah, I said you complain if you don't do well.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah. And so then you go out and rip it and it's like, cool. Well, don't worry
of
about
course,
it.
Of course, it was fine. I mean, listen, a comedian before his show is a very different man.
Yeah, totally.
But the funny thing about that was, so, you know, because like Amos is pretty famous, so it's always like, oh, you want to get on, you know? So I got there, he hadn't been on yet. So I kind of went over to him and, like, you know, I was just waiting for him to say, if you want to go on first, it's cool. Of course he wouldn't, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's an insult, really, for him to swap it around. You know, it's better for him to be like, nah, I'm fucking follow you, fuck that. But he had said to you that he needed to go.
Yeah.
So that's a funny one where it's like, the comedian doesn't want to fucking have to follow somebody else. I was like, oh, I really need to go.
Yeah.
So I'm in a rush. So you made sure that he got on.
Yeah.
And then... he fucking watched my whole set.
Yeah. And,
and I hung out with him afterwards.
Yes.
And it was fine because he did well and I did well. So I love him, you know. Then there's no problem. But if he fucking, you know, like he did 20 minutes and then I fucking couldn't get the room, I would have been pissed off.
And he did do that. He did three gigs for me during the festival and he did that every time. I got to get on because I got to go somewhere. Okay. And then he get on and then he hangs out for the next hour or two at the same venue. It's like, yeah, that was a lie.
But I was aware that he was up there killing it, so much so. And, you know, it's not always a good technique, and I did it, and I got away with it, but it doesn't always work. I did do that thing where I sort of made a joke about him, in a positive way, but about him, sort of link out of it. Almost like that Give It Up For Your MC, that the Americans do, Give It Up For Your MC. But I kind of went like, oh, Stephen K must have ripping it, and then... I made an inappropriate joke, which I won't repeat because it won't be funny.
Yep.
And but that worked, thank God. But that's not always a good technique.
Sure. Yeah.
It can fail.
Yeah. No, but like that room that night was bulletproof.
Was good,
it was everyone was killing.
Highlights.
So.
Highlights of my festival, man.
Yeah.
Carl, thanks so much.
Thanks, man.
Just a handshake.
Thanks for the ride home.
Oh, great. You know what? I'm not even going to turn it off. I'm gonna sign off while I'm driving after you get out of the car.
Oh, okay.
I never
All
do
right.
that.
All right.
I'm changing you've motivated me to just change up the game.
Okay.
So you can just leave the mic on the seat.
All right. And you just, can bitch about me when I'm gone.
I'm not gonna bitch about you. I'm just gonna wrap it up. Yeah. I'm gonna actually do like a wrap up. But thanks, man. All
right.
I'll see you during the week.
All right. I've got another gig for you, so I'll hit you up.
Oh, you got another gig?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
By the way, Carl is now standing outside my car, but he's still holding the mic. You can say goodbye without the mic,
so
you could do the closing door.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So anyway, guys, that is this week's podcast. As I said, I don't normally do the sign off like immediately, but now I'm just driving off. You know, part of the reason why I wanted to do this podcast was I got upgraded when I rented this car. So I've been cruising around an E-Class Merc. And there's just something real nice about cruising around in a Merc around Melbourne. And, you know, so I'm just chatting with my homie Carl. And, you know, it was different, you know, because I know you guys don't know Carl, but I just thought it'd be cool to just chat to a comic at, you know, doing the stuff that he's doing. And he's been helpful to me, so I was, like, happy to, you know, get his name out there and all that shit. So anyway, guys, we got Tom Ballard coming up. I'm talking to him on Wednesday, so I should have that up by Thursday. And so we'll be talking about some stuff that's in his show, kind of just about the bubble that we can live in sometimes with liberal, sort of liberal middle class whiteness. Which I sort of teed up last week, but I've shoved this one in the meantime, just to cruise around again. And Melbourne is a great city to cruise around in, man. You know, like right now, it's 23 minutes past 12. It's kind of a warm 14 degrees. Like it's 14, but doesn't feel cold. You know, it's nice. And Melbourne gets sleepy on a Monday night, you know? There's a sleepiness to it right now, you know, as you drive through the inner suburbs of Melbourne. And if people have never been here, you know, there's tram lines and these sort of overhanging awnings outside shops and certain streets like Brunswick Street and Fitzroy and Victoria Street that we were on earlier. They almost look like sets out of a Western. Because their shop fronts are quite old, but they're not high, and it almost looks like there's nothing behind them. There's an energy that Melbourne has that is not like any other city in the world, to be honest. And a quaintness, but yet a coolness that is hard to achieve, but just is the perfect combination of a city. So it was nice to be able to just take it in. So I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you're having a nice time wherever you are, wherever you're listening to this. And we'll be back on Thursday. Hopefully nothing goes wrong in the meantime. Thanks to Carl Chandler for taking the time to chat to us. And again, you know, I'm repeating myself, but I did ask him to talk about the difficulties of booking comics. So don't think he's like a fucking total bitching about stuff. I mean, that's what I wanted to talk to him about. So I will sign off from, what street am I on? Just to give you a final sense of place as we come to the end of this, because I think I'm in Richmond, but I just want to make sure that I let you know right at the end of my podcast exactly where I am. I'm on the corner of Lennox Street and Bridge Road, just passing the 48D as it heads the other direction to Q Depot, because that's the end of that tram's night, and that's the end of our night. Good night.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.